Thank you for joining Hashtag No Limits. I am your host, Shelley Kino. Hashtag No Limits is about people whose society places limits upon, but who have busted through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we will become. And I believe that to be 100% true, and that there is not a better, more beautiful example of that than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. For those who don't know, the caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells, and then it has to reform into the shape of the butterfly. While it's in the cocoon, though, it still has to struggle. I can't imagine that was not enough struggle going from cells to a butterfly again, but then it still has to struggle to make its wings strong enough to take it everywhere that it's going to soar to. That can't be easy, as I said, but neither is busting through the limits that society places upon a person. And today, I am excited to share Sarah with you. She has a very interesting background and current story. I just want to do a little bit of business before we get started. Please like or subscribe to this channel so that you never miss an episode of Hashtag No Limits or anytime that I go live with my IEP tips or behavioral tips. Also, make sure that if you are watching us live, you give us a hashtag live in the chat or a hashtag replay if you're watching in the replay, and let us know where you're from. It's always nice for us to know, or for me especially, to know where all of the viewers are coming from. So, Sarah, thank you so much for joining me today. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm so excited to be here.
Good. I'm excited to have you. So tell me, or tell the audience, a little bit about your background.
I'm Sarah. I am a nurse. I graduated from nursing school and worked mostly in pediatric oncology and then became a nurse manager. And then was feeling a little bit ready to try something new and learned about nurse coaching. So I left the bedside in December 2020 and took this leap to create my own business and coaching. And then that led me to, I also have two daughters, and live on an organic vegetable farm with my family that I grew up on. But then it led me to about 6 months ago saying I wanted to write a kid's book about dyslexia. I'm dyslexic. My dad's dyslexic. And one of my daughters was recently diagnosed with dyslexia. And that came with a lot of feelings of anger that I shared it with her. It came with joy because it really creates you being able to think differently and knowing that this is only going to make her a really strong, beautiful girl in the future. But that also comes with knowing that we needed to set her up with the support that she needed. And I had said to a friend in one of my coaching calls, I want to write a book for kids and I want my daughter to realize how beautiful she is. And I want her to know deep down that her brain is beautiful. And I want her to feel empowered with the diagnosis and not have her feel like this is something that she can't talk about. So it really became a topic of conversation before her diagnosis of like, mommy's writing this book. Dyslexia became a conversation that was no longer something to fear or no longer something to hide from. And it's not something I hid from as a kid, but it was something that later in life I started to hide from a little bit. And I really just wanted her to not feel the way I had in the last maybe 10 years. And so we just made it a conversation. And so she got proud of the fact that mommy wrote a book and then she was diagnosed. And it wasn't fear-based anymore. It was just a part of how we were able to communicate with her and her sister and her peers and her friends, of like, this is what's going on with us. Just like it would be if somebody was diagnosed with a different diagnosis, maybe medical wise, that you would have a conversation with your kids about it. And so it just became this beautiful base where it felt like a little love letter to the girls.
Oh, that's very beautiful. Absolutely. If you wouldn't mind giving a brief definition of dyslexia and then talking about in you how it presents and if it presents differently in your daughter or in your dad, how it looks in one or both of them.
So dyslexia is a learning disability or learning challenge, and it often is related to having difficulty with spelling, writing, and reading. So a lot of times the phonics of for kids, like I think of cat, like C-A-T, that at, specifically like thinking about blending that, like with my daughter, we realized that she would know at, but when you put a C in front of it, she no longer knew that the last two letters were at. It became really hard for her to blend that. And it came really, and then you would do bat. And then it, she kept not being able to remember that AT sound, even though she knew it when it was just AT. So that's sort of how Ellie presented. I had a horrible time spelling. I still can't spell. Thank goodness for voice to text. It has been a huge, huge help for me. Didn't have that when I was a kid. And reading comprehension often becomes a challenge. So you might read something and not remember what you just read, and not remember the concept, the theme that was read in that first sentence or paragraph or even the chapter. For me specifically, I do so much better if I just read it. I probably, and this is just my personal guess, is if I just read it straight, I probably retain about 35 to 45% of what I read. If I just listen to it, it's probably 45 to 55%. And if I listen and read at the same time, so if I have a book in front of me and I'm listening to the book, I'll retain enough that I can like 80%, 85%, probably what is like considered more normal of being able to really understand and comprehend the whole concept of what is being communicated. And that took time to learn that for myself. So that was one of my, one of the things that I was given in college, let's say, was like, I had a reader for tests and I had, the test in front of me. So it would either be like the computer reading it to me, or I had like a, sometimes I'd even have professors who wanted me to succeed and they would read me the test because they,
oh, that's awesome.
So committed. And it was all about the fact that I communicated what my needs were, and it didn't mean that I always got them met, but at least I felt voiced and heard. And that's the, my big message for kids and for parents to help them instill this in their families and just in like normal day to day of like kids' brains, whether they're dyslexic or not, are beautiful, just exactly where they are. And then sometimes we need to support that beautiful brain and we need to give them skills and tools to help them with the way that they learn and the way that they, are able to succeed. Whether that be a reader or whether that be that we take extra breaks and we're still learning what my daughter needs. She's a great speller, which is part of what held us back from getting her diagnosed was because she spells really well. And most dyslexics, and I can't say all, but a lot of dyslexics have trouble with spelling, but she tends to do really well with it. Whereas my dad, he's loves to read. He'll read all the time. He's always, always, always reading. But he had more trouble with like the, like in younger years with, I don't even really know exactly what he had trouble with, but I know he had trouble with like concentration and things not presenting as clearly for him. But he is an avid reader. Whereas I would say that is not something that I have. I love to read and I tend to listen to books on tape over sitting with a book and reading.
Yeah. So I hope that everybody caught that, you know, she just talked about three different people who have the same diagnosis, but it presents a little differently in each one of them. And what you said about your daughter with the at blend, I can't tell you, and I probably did this myself as a teacher, said to students, but how many times like I've heard it, or like I said, maybe I said it myself going, but you just said it. You just said it in the last word. You just had it.
Yeah.
And not realizing maybe that a student that I was working with had maybe dyslexia, or that was one of the characteristics or one of the ways that it could present. So how, when you were growing up, how difficult was it for you? First of all, let me ask, did you have an IEP or a 504 or any sort of accommodations when you were going through school?
I did. I got diagnosed when I was in second grade, which is interesting because my daughter got diagnosed in second grade also. And my mom said she knew at the start of kindergarten that something wasn't right. And I would agree the same thing. I just had this gut feeling that something wasn't quite right. But then again, like her spelling was okay. But I did have an IEP. And I think it changed a lot. I would say I remember it more from college because I was in control of it more and it was mine to own versus as a child. I don't totally remember it. But I do remember like I would get pulled from reading group and would go to the reading specialist. We played this game called Old Itch and it was like memory. But if you got this, like bad card, then you would have to give cards back. Anyway, I loved it. Really great at memory. Loved the game memory. My family still won't play me against memory because I'm really good at it. But that was one of the like fun things that we got to do after we did our work. And we would just like read sight words because sight words are hard. You can't sound them out. There's right. no real rhyme or reason to them. So we had these manila cards and we would just have to read them really fast. My daughter gets to do it and her way seems a little bit more fun. They'll tend to play games with those sight words more now, like tic-tac-toe, and have to create words out of the sight words. So she is getting support that way. And we'll sort of see what the school year brings and what she needs. For me in college, it was, my books were, I could get them. They would slice the book and then I could actually get them copied and then I could hear them auditory.
Okay.
I would also have somebody who could take notes for me in college. So it wasn't me. I could listen to the lecture and then I would have somebody else take notes for me and they would give me their notes. I personally showed up for every single time a professor would give me the opportunity to see them one-on-one so that they knew, because I went to University of Vermont. It wasn't a small school. I mean, there was times that I was in a classroom with 150 people, but every professor knew who I was by the end of the first week, because I made sure that they had a face to the name and I wasn't just a number. And I think that was really part of my success in college was that like, here are my accommodations. I need these and I'll work with you as long as you work with me too. And people were really, really accommodating to help me with those. So a reader for tests, note taker, showing up for all the extra options because I wasn't a great reader. So I had to learn and find ways to learn that weren't just reading the textbook. So if somebody said, read chapter 3, that was useless to me. I had to learn a different way to learn chapter 3. And so I would find ways to do that in college.
And I'm so happy that you brought out the fact that you were advocating for yourself in those first couple of weeks, because I often feel that when I talk to students in college and students in high school, they don't want to be that kid who goes and speaks to the teachers, you know, to let them know that they have the need for the accommodations. And so to hear you talk about it and have such a positive experience with it, I feel is hopefully, I think it's encouraging. Hopefully it will encourage others to step up and do that and to let people know and remind them, because it's been said multiple times in my episodes that you can get help in college.
You can.
There are so many teachers still in the primary and high school ages that say that you don't get help in college. You're not going to get these accommodations in college. If you speak up for yourself and you follow you go to the disability office or the student services office or whatever it might be on your particular college campus, they will help you. Even if you haven't had an IEP, I've heard of some situations where a specific student that actually I'm thinking about went to Penn State, had never been diagnosed in grade school or high school. Had never received eligibility for special education, but had been diagnosed with dyslexia when she was like in fourth or fifth grade. When she got to Penn State and she told them all the accommodations that she had used and that she had figured out, they said, absolutely, you have the diagnosis. We're going to help you.
Yeah. I had a friend in college who after being with me asked her family to get her tested and did. And then she started receiving accommodations in the middle of college because it was only to her benefit to get the support she needed. She didn't need as much support as I did, but the little support that she was able to get with those accommodations made a big difference for her in school. And so we just, her being around me made her feel empowered enough to ask for that support.
Yeah. And I want people to really understand that it is support. It is help. It is not dumbing down curriculum. It is not making it easier for someone. It's truly, accommodations are to give access.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I look at buildings and I think, you know, okay, if I've got even a 5-story building and I try to get to the 3rd story without steps, it's not going to happen.
Right.
So there have been steps built. There have been maybe escalators built. There's probably elevators. All those things support us and give us access to the higher levels. It's just that some people might use the steps and not use the elevator because they don't need to. Right. But there are some people who are going to need to use the elevator to get there, and that's okay.
I always sort of help people understand, like, if you took my glasses away, you wouldn't want me driving.
Yes.
If you took my glasses away, I wouldn't be able to read the board. If you took somebody's insulin away, they wouldn't be with us. Like, they wouldn't be successful in their day-to-day controlling their blood sugar. And so while it's not the same as being diabetic, I do think it's close to being the same as losing your glasses. If you took my glasses away, I wouldn't be successful. I wouldn't be able to see you on the computer screen. So it's the same idea to me, is like putting on a pair of glasses, is like having that reader is where you start to be like, oh, I have glasses now. It's just a reader. It's just a different kind of adaptability, like glasses are.
Right. Yes. And I think we really have to bust through the limit of thinking that only someone who is blind needs to have someone else read the book to them or the story to them, or only someone who is deaf needs, some other accommodate, like having a sign language person, or, you know, I mean, an accommodation is not a bad thing. And just because you think it might only be beneficial to one person doesn't negate it for being helpful to other people.
Yeah.
And the glasses is such a great example. I will tell a quick story from my book, Those Who Can't Teach. I had a teacher who always forgot to give the students that we worked with the accommodations. Mm-hmm. And she would tell me, well, I sometimes do it on purpose. And I'm like, sometimes? Okay. But but I said, she said, sometimes I do it on purpose because I want to see how they do without the accommodation. And my almost exact words to her were, if you want to see how someone can activate or act without their accommodations, the next time you get into a taxi or you get into a car with a driver that has glasses, have them take their glasses off and drive you where you want to go. And then you can find out how they are without the accommodation.
I have personal experience of, when I graduated from nursing school, I went to sit for my nursing boards, and 3 days before my nursing boards, my reader got sick, canceled. I don't know what it was. They couldn't come. And it wasn't just like somebody else can do it. There's a very specific criteria for it. And we had gotten somebody, I had to drive to Delaware. It was like my mom and I stayed in a hotel that night so that I could get there in time. And I decided, like, I'm going to do it without the reader. Like, I've been waiting. I'm going to have to wait another 2 months for this. I don't want to do that. I'm going away this summer. Like, this was supposed to be done and I wasn't going to have to worry about it. Well, I failed miserably. Like, it was a good old college try on that one, but I did not do well. It was one of those tests too, where like it would time you out if you did terribly at like 75 questions, or it would time you out if you did really well at 75 questions, or you could get up to 100 and 250 questions if you were like borderline doing okay. But it would give you more questions. Like, if you didn't know cardio, it would give you more questions in cardio. And if you didn't do well in respiratory stuff, it would give you more questions in respiratory, but less in pediatrics because you were really good at that stuff. So I timed out at 75 questions because I did so terribly. Like, it was like, you cannot pass this test. You've done so terribly. And took it again, like had worked this summer, and then because I was away, took it later that like early fall kind of time. And I passed in 75 questions with a reader. So it was one of those moments where you were like, yep, I definitely needed that reader. And who knows what would have had it happened had I taken the test with the reader the first time. I might have still failed, but I definitely would have probably done a little bit better than I did with no reader.
Right. Yeah. And what a beautiful example. I mean, that's just such a great, here's the mm-hmm. perfect anecdote for that, you know. Yeah. Just anecdote's probably not the word I want, but but yeah, I mean, I appreciate you telling that story. So when you were going through school and you did have the IEP, do you feel that teachers were placing limits upon your future ability, which is kind of the idea of hashtag no limits, is again, we know who we are, but not who we're going to be.
Yeah. I think sometimes it's like hindsight, like as an adult, my mom's probably told me more stories than I do remember necessarily. I feel like there were teachers who thought I was dumb. I had a teacher, actually, this is a good story. Not so good at the time, but I actually had a teacher in college who had been hearing about me for 4 years. I took her class, my last year. And she said, I've been hearing your name for 4 years. My goal was to fail you senior year, spring semester. I was going to fail in my class, knowing that you would have to come back to college the following year and that I would hold you back from graduation because you couldn't get PEDS again for another whole year.
Oh my gosh.
And she said, I mean, the counter to that was I was wrong. I realize you can read and that you are pretty smart. And so I do give her credit for like realizing she was wrong, but it was like a knife to the heart of like,
right.
You didn't realize that, like, you just didn't ever get to, you never had me before in school. I understand that. And you've just been hearing my name a lot, but there was a lot of like her limits. She had limits that she thought, and I was able to prove her wrong. But that sat with me for a while of realizing like people do hold you back and they think that they're like protecting, I don't know, the world. So that was an interesting experience in college. My high school experience was pretty good. It was a very small school. It didn't come with its own rockiness, but I feel like high school was, they worked with more kids with learning challenges. And then elementary school, like I said, I feel like hindsight, I've learned a little bit more. I also feel like for every one person who was trying to hold me back, there was like five people who were not.
Oh, that's awesome. That is the opposite of what I think I hear most.
And
so to have that for you, that's phenomenal.
Yeah. I do feel like there were people who wanted to hold me back. But I do feel like there were people who were on the other side. I had a college teacher who was my microbiology teacher, and I failed her first exam, and she's like, Sarah, you know this stuff. And I said, I just can't get it on paper. I just can't seem to translate it to the paper. And she's like, come to my lab at 6 a.m., which is in college. Like, nobody gets up at 5 o'clock in the morning to get to an exam at 6 a.m. Come to the lab at 6 a.m. and I'll have you do the whole test orally. You'll tell me what's on the plates. You'll tell me what the agar is, what's growing, why it's happening, and I'll grade you that way. And I went from failing to getting an A in her class.
That's so amazing. And I love to hear that. I wish that was the story all the time.
Yeah.
I would have a different, this, I could still do hashtag no limits, but it would be, you know, many more happier stories like that one.
Yeah. And it didn't come with a lot of fighting.
Yeah.
And it didn't come with a lot of advocating and a lot of tears. and a lot of failures. You know, I failed my sociology class in college. It was my freshman year, and I didn't know how to study in the way that I needed to in college, and how to take that class again. It didn't come with lots of tears as a kid, and my mom and dad seriously advocating for me to be able to get the accommodations that I needed. My mom was very feisty. Not that I don't think all moms are, but she was very feisty. And with that, at the same time, was also a huge advocate of making me feel like I could be anything I wanted to be.
Yeah. And I think that's so important when we have at least one person in our corner. And it sounds like you had more than one person throughout your education and throughout your life. And that is such a wonderful aspect that I feel that so many people are missing. So I'm very happy for you that you had that. What kind of things have you seen, or maybe you haven't, hopefully, with your daughter? Has anybody put limitations on her currently that she's maybe already busted through, or that you know she will bust through?
This is one that I'm really proud of her. One of the kids, there was a couple kids in her class who told her being dyslexic means you're not smart. And it was really heartbreaking. It came with a lot of emotions on my end. And she goes, "It's okay, Mom. I handled it. I told them that's not what dyslexia means. And I am very smart. And I have a very different brain than them." And like in second grade, she's advocating for herself.
Awesome.
And it didn't bring her down. Like, she clearly came home sad that she had to have a conversation with her peers. But at the same time, like, because we've had this conversation for the last, I mean, it's been for her whole life, but really, really intentional around it for the last, since this fall, this past fall, intentionally talking about it in front of her, of like what it means and who else in our family has it. And it really allowed her to stand up for herself.
Yeah, that's so awesome. And absolutely, you should be proud. I'm proud of her, and I don't even know her. Mm-hmm. I wish that we, again, this is kind of a wish for the show, and the reason for it is I wish that more people would understand and teach their kids. Just because somebody is different than you doesn't make them less or bad, or that you need to be scared of them, or that they're not going to be a good friend, or, you know, whatever the myriad of things are that kids tend to develop on their own. I don't feel that somebody is at home saying, "Oh, somebody with dyslexia is dumb." You know, it's something that these kids have just decided, but because nobody has taught them any different, then they get stuck with that idea.
Yeah. And so that's really like the message that I have in my book, is that, like, you know, all brains are beautiful. Dyslexic brains are beautiful. They're smart. And so really trying to get into communities and get out into places like this of being able to communicate, you know, as parents at home, it starts with us. It starts with us talking about our friends who are different, and that their differences don't make them anything other than perfect for who they are. We try to instill that in our girls regularly, that they are, they're powerful, their words are powerful, and kindness always trumps everything else. Kindness and love really trump how we show up in the world. And if those two show up first, and you're kind to the people around you, you can go really far, and people will support you and help you along the way. I have a couple friends. I have a friend from elementary school who studied with me for my nursing boards. She was not a nurse. She just would come over and study with me to help me be successful. My college roommate was also a nurse, and we studied together all the time. Don't think I would have made it through nursing school without her. My husband is now supportive in every time I write for my posts for social media. He just double checks them to make sure I'm not missing something, or if like the idea isn't 100% what I'm trying to communicate, he can say, like, "This doesn't feel quite right. What are you trying to say here?" So being able to have people like that in your corner. And then my mom was my first one. So having people, creating space where people can be in your community. And that's, I feel like both, all of those were led with me being who I am, mm-hmm. and asking for the help when I needed it. And then being kind to those friends and supporting each other.
Right. So I'm glad that worked out, that sort of circled right into your book, because that was what I was going to talk to you about next. So I've got greenperspectivecoaching.com up on the page now, so that that's how people reach out to you. Is that also where they can purchase the book, or where do they find the book?
You can find my book on Amazon. So just a kid's book about dyslexia. It's through a Kids Co. So you can go onto a Kids Co. .com also, but Amazon seems to be the easiest way for people to get my book.
Okay. And you said you just released that
in March.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Congratulations. As a fellow author, I know how exciting that moment was. At least for me, when my book went live on Amazon, I was like, it's alive.
It's alive. And my name's like, you can type in Sarah Dravers on Amazon and my book pops up. It's like, mind blowing. And also to be dyslexic and being able to write a book feels like such a triumph. I mean, truly.
Right. Exactly.
Never a great writer. And this just feels like it kind of closes that feeling of like, oh, you're not a good writer. It really makes you feel like I just wrote a book. So.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. And I think, again, those are some limits right there. The fact that you're a nurse, that you have a bachelor's in nursing, that you have, you know, because I know that there are different levels of nurses. So you can have a lesser degree than a bachelor's, and then the degree. And then I noticed you have several letters behind your name, which I did not include them all in the title for today, but those all require further education. And so right there, I mean, oftentimes people think, oh, somebody with a learning disability is never going to do something where a lot of reading is required. And there's a ton, from my friends who are in the medical world have told me, a ton of reading involved with any degree, but very specifically with a nursing degree.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So dyslexics, because of the way that we think, tend to be really good entrepreneurs. So like, all of the family members that I have that are dyslexic all own their own business, including myself now. And so it's fun to be able to realize like we don't necessarily fit into the mold, and that's okay. I did go the route of being a nurse and working at the bedside and being a nurse manager. And I loved it in those moments, but I also realized like I am meant for something different and I'm meant for more. And I want to support other people in their journey of finding like regulation in their nervous system and helping kids and adults find the beauty within themselves. And so stepping away from the bedside and starting my own business has been like a blessing.
So talk to me a little bit more about your coaching and mm-hmm. how that all works for you and for your clients as well.
So far I've mostly worked with women. Since my book has come out, I'm starting to figure out how I can add it into working with more kids too, and emotional regulation. So I have found that when I think back to myself and to other kids, even my daughter with emotional regulation, it's hard. It's hard to have a feeling inside of like, okay, I'm angry. I'm angry that homework is so hard. What do I do with that anger? It tends to project onto people. It tends to project onto parents. It tends to project onto friends, depending on where you are. And how do we help that nervous system and find some, that anger doesn't have to go towards anybody, but you're allowed to experience anger. It's a totally a normal emotion. And so helping women with that too. Often women often have suppressed anger or suppressed feelings. And then our nervous system gets dysregulated. So anxiety pops in and then we don't know what to do with that. And then we lash out at our kids or we lash out at our spouses or we feel disconnected from whatever it is. So we're scrolling on our phone all day or we get home from work and all we want to do is pop open a bottle of wine and not be, with the in the moment. So really helping families and helping everybody find that space to connect with their nervous system and find out what it is that we need in this moment. What do we need? What does my body need? Does it need to go for a walk? Does it need a glass of water? Does it need to get up and go to the bathroom? That has not been updated recently. I'm doing a in-person one this week, which I'm super excited about. What does it need? And how do we help the nervous system tune into what it needs? So like yesterday I was getting really anxious. I had to get some things done. There were some expectations that I had around a project that I was doing. And I felt my system kind of come up with it was like really frustrated. I'm trying to frivolously get it done. And I had to get to my kids within an hour and it had to get done. And all of a sudden I thought, I can take 30 minutes off. I'm going to go for a walk. I'm going to go walk down to the river. I'm going to acknowledge what I'm feeling right now. And you know what? It took me 10 minutes to get it done when I came back to it an hour later. And so just being able to help women realize that they can walk away from something and come back to it, it'll still be there and you might be more successful.
Yes. I used to tell my daughter that all the time because she would get frustrated. And I was a teacher at the time. Although there's your name with the book. That's such a cool thing. And she would get frustrated. And I would tell her it's okay. Just walk away from it for a minute. Like you've been sitting here for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour, and you're not getting anywhere. You mm-hmm. just like, it literally will reset your brain. Just get up and walk away. Mm-hmm. And especially if it was at nighttime, and she was like, and I'd say, just go to bed. And when you get up in the morning, we'll get up a little bit early and you can work on it. And other teachers would tell her that. Now, when they told her that, she would listen. When I told her that, it wasn't necessarily that she would listen to it because mom didn't know.
Yeah.
But it worked for her and it works for me, but it is so hard to make yourself take that break.
Yeah.
And step away from that moment.
Remember back in college, my eye would twitch near exams. Like it would paint, it was just so frustrating. And then the exam would go away and all that tension would just leave my body. So the work that I'm doing, the breath work that I'm doing and the somatic work that I do for myself, I also do for my clients, helping people realize okay, there's energy trapped in our bodies. And what do you need to release that? Is it that you need, you like running? I don't like running, but I have clients who like to go for a run. And so we help them figure out 5 minutes of running is going to be better than no running. So let's create 5 minutes of time where you can go outside and run the driveway and just move that. And then you can come back and be more successful in your day and feel more empowered and more connected to your body. Cause we're so think our mind is in control, but our body has so much stored. So just allowing that to be present and allowing ourselves to talk to our body and listen to it.
Yeah. And I think there's so many people that they don't pay attention to, my heart's racing or my hands are sweating or my stomach feels weird. And they just brush it off. And, they're just going to, like I said, my daughter and I have done this myself. Cool. Like I'm just going to barrel through it mm-hmm. and I'm just going to keep going until I get it done. Yeah. And yeah, because no one can see the future. So we can't tell for sure that if we walk away for 5 minutes or an hour,
right,
and then come back to it, that's going to take us 2 minutes to finish it. But if we sat there,
yeah,
we might be sitting there that full hour and being more and more frustrated and our bodies getting more and more tense and not feeling well and all the things. I definitely think that for moms, it's worse.
Yeah. And it's all about I have to give, I often, and I did it too, is gave from a place of empty. And if I take an hour to breathe, cause that's what has helped my system. Yours might be something else, but if I take that it might not even be an hour, maybe it's 10 minutes. But if I take that time, I can come back and give from a place of not feeling like all the holes in the sieve are just like wide open, that I can start closing some of those holes off. And so really allowing my nervous system to regulate has really allowed for like more connection with my husband, more connection with each of the kids, being able to be more in tune with what is happening in their system, and not just coming from a place of like reaction. And not to say that we're perfect, we still have our moments, but trying to be more understanding of what is happening in my system. Because also raising a child who is, I don't want to say she's like me because she's her own being, but like some of her tendencies are more like mine. And so raising her, I'm no longer the child with dyslexia. I'm the parent with dyslexia who's raising a dyslexic child. And so sometimes I've noticed like my own feelings of like frustration of like school, like I can put myself into her feelings.
Right.
And having to come back into my own body and being like, you're the parent here. You're not the child. And being able to acknowledge like, hey, I'm really sorry. Mommy had a moment that I wasn't being the best mommy. And I was having my own story around what's happening right here. That was me being more in my childhood self than me being in my adult self. And so being able to acknowledge those moments too, and having less of those, has been really helpful for us as a family. But acknowledging the fact that like, I am dyslexic and I have my own things too. And sometimes her stuff brings up my own stuff.
Sure. Absolutely. And I mean, it's said on your website, you know, that you're trauma informed. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I'm saying this to somebody who knows this, that when we have our trauma, it does come up. Mm-hmm. And while you might not have necessarily felt it in the moments that you were going through school, like you said, kind of retrospectively, now you can see, mm-hmm. oh yeah, okay, that happened, or this person was treating me mm-hmm. poorly when they shouldn't have been. And thankfully you didn't recognize it as a child, but there are children who recognize it while it's happening. And so we do.
I think I recognize it as a kid. I think I sometimes maybe don't like to acknowledge it, but I mean, there were teachers that I can still think back to that were holding me back. And we're not great. But that being said, like, I also am thankful as to like the fact that when somebody tells me no, I double down and I'm like, you said no. Well, I'm going to show you yes, because I can do it. And I'm going to make you wrong because I'm going to be really successful. So sometimes those no gave me fire as a kid too.
And I think that there's a lot of teachers that believe that is what they're doing when they say something that is received very negatively. It's like, oh, I'm giving them the push that they need because they're going to prove me wrong. That's that, you know, and that is fine for some people, but it doesn't work for everyone. And
you know, like, would it have been nicer to feel like in first grade that my teacher thought I was smart and that, you know, my failures weren't like plastered over the front of the classroom for every other child to see that I wasn't successful in math. Like, it would have been really nice to not have that like written for the world to see.
Right.
But that being said, I mean, I can't change it now. So I'm just going to use that for my, I can't change it now. It's part of that stuff that when I think about my childhood self, when I'm with my daughter, of like, okay, we want to empower her and have her have a strong belief in herself.
Yeah. And I think, again, my hope with this show is that if there are teachers that are continuing in those practices now, or if there are university professors who are teaching those types of practices still, that this will help them understand why that's not the way to do it. It is truly not motivating. It might motivate 1 out of 100 people, but you've got 99 people that you have now just damaged.
I mean, it didn't come without its own damage too.
Right.
it didn't come without its own set of things that I've had to work through. It did still make me double down, but it didn't not hurt, and it didn't not like leave us some version of a scar. And then when I think about the teachers who showed up to the lab at 6 a.m., like those are the people who made me believe in myself and helped me get to my success, truly.
Yeah. And thankfully, I had heard stories of teachers like your professor who said, show up at 6 a.m. when I was learning to become a teacher. I've known since I was 9 that I wanted to be a teacher. And so my ears were always peaked when somebody talked about a positive experience that they'd had with a teacher. And thankfully, I'm sure I didn't do it perfectly, but I always wanted to be that champion in the corner for every single one of my students. And I think that helped drive. I mean, I have relationships with, I think, every student that I've ever taught, and they're positive. You know, it's not like anybody sees me coming and turns the other way. You know, everybody that I can remember, at least, is, you know, always been thankful. And even students that weren't my students that I made relationships with and connections with because of different programs that I offered at school and whatnot. I always wanted to be that person's cheerleader. And we should always be somebody's cheerleader, or everybody's cheerleader, maybe. I don't know that we can each be everybody's cheerleader, but be there, you know, and encourage as much as possible.
That's what I do with my coaching, is I take somebody's, you know, somebody's dream of what they see for their lives and what they want to create in their life and how they're feeling currently in this moment. Like, I'm feeling tired and overweight and sad, and like, I just, things aren't the way that I want them to be. And we take what you have in this moment and who you want to become, and we just start taking those pieces together and creating the version of yourself that you want to be. And the version of myself 3 years ago, like, I'm getting to the version of who I wanted to be, but I didn't even know how to get there. I had to have a coach help me get there, because doing it on your own is really hard. It's hard to be able to do it for yourself and see where you need to push, and having yourself have somebody else believe in your dream is so impactful. I mean, so being able to do that for people, and being able to take that dream and like truly believe it for them when they can't is I think the best gift.
Yeah, I would agree. That's an amazing gift for sure. Sarah, what else? We're getting close to the end, and I want to make sure, as I always try for my guests, as I've said, this is your opportunity to tell your story the way you want to tell it. So with, you know, 10-ish minutes left, what have we maybe not covered that you want to cover, or what do you want to talk more about?
I feel like we covered a lot. I feel like between like the story that I've been able to share today is that I really just want others to realize that like your story, like kind of what you were talking about, is like the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. Like, your story hasn't been written yet. You can be 15 to whatever. I mean, you can be younger, but like, you can be young to older. I had a 73-year-old woman work with me because she just wanted her life to be different. And because you might think you can't teach an old dog new tricks is kind of the theory I think people think easily. Right. Like, you can learn something new no matter where you are in life. And you can write your story however you want to write it. And if you need support on it, you know where to find it. You can ask me, you can ask Shelley. Don't let these limits that you've even set for yourself, because I think that sometimes we can be our own worst nightmare of like, oh, I can't do that. There's no way I can change. There's no way I can feel regulated. There's no way I can feel not anxious. There's no way I can learn to read. That there are people out there that are willing to help you, and ask for help, whether it's because you're a new mom and you're struggling, or because you're, you know, 35 and you still feel like you don't know how to read, or because there's something else in your life that feels hard, ask for help, because asking for help is always it's always the best thing to do.
Yeah. And another picture example that I like to do is, like, if you think about a building, no building stands on one leg. It has to have at least two. Or if it is standing on one leg, it's scary. Nobody trusts it.
Yeah.
So get that additional support. That doesn't make you less than, that doesn't make you weaker. That doesn't, it's empowering. Mm-hmm. I think, to get that support and get that help.
Yeah.
So I appreciate very much you saying that. Well, thank you.
You're
so
welcome.
Much
You're welcome.
For being my guest today. This has
I'm
been
so
a very good. This has been very enjoyable. And for anyone watching, make sure that you like and subscribe to the channel, whether you're watching it on Facebook or you're watching it on YouTube. And make sure that you are always thinking about your own thoughts. And why do I think that way? And did I just limit somebody by that thought? And how can I change that perspective? Because as Sarah said, we look at all of her examples of all of the limits that she has busted through that people probably thought and some actually had said to her. The limits that her daughter is already busting through, the self-advocacy in second grade to say, my brain is just different. I am very smart. It just is going to come out or look different than it does for you. Mm-hmm. Her dad, again, you know, we've had three examples today, and there are as many people with dyslexia as there are with examples of limits that they're busting through. So one thank in, you all.
One in five people are dyslexic.
Wow.
Yep.
And there you go. So there are millions of people every day busting through limits that most of us know nothing about. You know, there's not some sign for everybody that says, oh, I have dyslexia, or I have cerebral palsy, or I have ADHD, or I have whatever. So be encouraging when somebody is struggling. Offer support when you see them. If there's something that you think you can do, even if it's just listening. And I always say that we hear with our ears, but we listen with our heart. Mm-hmm. So make sure that you're listening with your heart. Again, Sarah, thank you so much.
You.
Everyone else, have a great week. Until next time, remember, hashtag no limits. We know who we are, but not who we will become.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelley Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelley Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelley Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shelleykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shelleykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.